Azure Development with Paul Yuknovich.
The Azure DevOps Podcast is a show for developers and DevOps professionals shipping software using Microsoft technologies. Each show brings you hard-hitting interviews with industry experts, innovating better methods, and sharing success stories. Listen on to learn how to increase quality, ship quickly, and operate well. And now your host, Jeffrey Palermo.
Welcome to the show. I'm Jeffrey Palermo, your host for helping you and your teams move fast, deliver quality, and run your software with confidence in Azure, and all while using everything that the .NET ecosystem has to offer. And if you are running a user group, virtual or otherwise, get in touch. I love speaking at those, and I'd love to give a presentation for you. Our top sponsor, ClearMeasure, makes this podcast happen. They are a software architecture company that empowers .NET teams to be self-sufficient and able to deliver world-class results. So if they can help, please get in touch. Also, be sure to check out the new video show, Architect Tips. And today on the show, we have a principal GPM on the Azure Dev Experience team. Let's give it up for Paul Yuknovich. Paul,
hey,
how
Jeffrey.
Are you? Welcome to the show.
Hey, it's been a long time. Thanks so much for having me on the show. This is really cool.
Awesome, awesome. Now, if people are consuming just tons of online material, they've no doubt heard you speak. But for those who haven't, you've been at Microsoft, you know, well over a decade now. Help the listener. What's been your journey?
Yeah, it's been 2 years. Yeah, 2 decades. Even over 2 decades.
Oh, wow.
Long time. Tell you about the journey. So I started in 2000. Microsoft was a different place back then, and I'm really happy how far we've come. But there was a lot going on in history, a lot going on at that time. And I was on the VB team. That was my first kind of full-time job at Microsoft. And VB, you would think of a little bit differently, I think, back then, too. It was more than a language, and it is more than a language. It's the tool. It's the experience. It's RAD. It's all those things. So I worked on a lot of the RAD aspects of VB, you know, to build apps with a lot of productivity. And that got me into web and data and web services. And I took a really deep dive on data. I worked on ADO.NET with things like data sets, strongly typed data sets. And eventually what, you know, evolved into the Entity Framework and Entity Framework tooling. So that was really fun. I love VB. I spent a lot of time kind of evangelizing VB and helping with migration from VB6 to .NET. And then I took a little bit of a pivot in my career. It was time to do something new after a decade. So I started working on the server more closely, and I worked on SharePoint, which was, if you think about it, like SharePoint Office 365 was one of our first clouds. So I cut my teeth on the cloud there. I learned a lot about what it was like to run a high availability server, and then switch gears again to work on Azure. And that was almost 11 years ago. So that's probably when we started hearing about Azure, is about when I started working on it. You know, I remember building the first published dialogue in Visual Studio that would get your app, your cloud service, you know, web and worker roles into Azure, and, you know, making sign-in work so you didn't need 100 certificates. So that was really fun. And then, you know, that's evolved throughout the years. Azure's just become so much bigger. Our team's bigger. And, you know, it's still really about providing an awesome experience to build a cloud app that's, you know, can scale, that's highly available, that's resilient, that works with all the services you want. You know, we lean pretty heavily into like PaaS these days. So we're trying to help people use PaaS and manage services really well. The other thing that I've been doing recently is I've spent a lot of time on diagnostics, because I think, you know, as developers, diagnostics and debugging is really critical to maintain your app. And so we've worked on things, not only kind of local tools, but also services. So we built a debugger service, a profiler, an application change analysis service, and we keep rounding out the toolbox of diagnostics tools that help you fix these apps. So that's just a little bit about me, kind of always a PM, always kind of, yeah. very nice. Close to .NET throughout, and
awesome.
But that's the common thread. But it's been fun because just the world, as we know, is just changing so much and so quickly.
Yes, yes. So, what is this for people who don't know, the Azure Dev Experience team? What do you focus on and put your brain to every day?
Yeah. So I think the key word in there, well, every word's a keyword, but it's really about the developer. It's about, you know, how does a developer view the world? What are they looking for? What's the experience that's awesome for them? So if you could stare at Azure and you could kind of say, hey, there's a lot of infrastructure. It helps me operate. It helps me manage. And I think that's an IT sort of a viewpoint. And we want to have the dev viewpoint and say, well, you know, developers are building applications. They're building services. So how do we give them more of that application and service feel? How do we help them build, you know, that application, build service using the right patterns? I think that's a big thing, with the right dependencies and, you know, kind of getting the right configuration in there. So it's just more about what the dev wants, from SDK to tools to services and to that overall kind of view, that application developer view of the world.
Okay.
And less about the infrastructure and the operations. That's important too, but that's less about what my team's about.
Well, the whole promise of cloud is we have to worry less about the infrastructure, right?
Exactly. Yeah. So you can kind of shift left a bit and be in more control as a dev over what's going on, right? And trust that, you know, Azure is taking care of a lot of the ops for you.
Well, for someone who's just deep in the know, industry-wise, we know that across people using Azure, they're using every bit of Azure. Okay, we know that. But is there, and I imagine there's tons of people just using regular VMs because they have stuff that they just lifted and shifted and all that, and it's kind of legacy, and they wish it would be off. But for developing new applications, do you have any sense or actual data on what is the most popular and has the most adoption? Versus maybe some things that are tiny now but have a higher growth trajectory of adoption.
Yeah, I can talk about that. So I think the undisputed most used service that's more modern is App Service. Mm-hmm. App Service, as a lot of us probably know, we put, you know, web and HTTP workloads there. So think like a web app, a web API. There's also in that family, there's Logic Apps, which do workflow, and there's the close cousin, which is functions, which is really like how you do serverless event-driven programming. So, you know, App Service is used the most. And what I typically say is, if you want to have a turnkey solution for a web application and you don't already have very specific, strict requirements in mind that you've already decided aren't covered by App Service, then App Service is the clear place to start. It's really productive. It's just so well optimized. And I think it's good for coarse grain web applications. You know, there are places where you can grow out of it. And let's say you're building more just a microservices application where every service is a microservice and you want to orchestrate, then you're going to start to find the seams, I think, in App Service.
Okay.
You know, going from coarse grain to microservice. But yeah, App Service is way up there. Functions is way up there. I think, you know, if I talked to you a few years ago, that was one of the fastest growing, and that has happened. And now, you know, Functions is way up there. A lot of us as devs, I think, use data and storage. So you can kind of think the complementary services would be, you know, SQL, whether it's MS SQL or Postgres, which both have managed services. And for the, I think the truly modern and cloud native applications, we see Cosmos DB a bit more and more, and mm-hmm. that handles some really cool scenarios like lightning fast replication. It can work worldwide and globally. So we're seeing that more and more when you need it, and you have to kind of decide, do I need that or not? Like, you will pay more,
yeah, right?
But it gives you a really good experience for doing that. You know, what to watch on kind of the fast emerging, you know, I think the ML and AI services are ones to watch. and so that you can get insights and run your models. I think ACI is a one to watch. That's the Azure Container Instances. And so that's kind of an unopinionated way to run containers on a serverless platform. So you just come with your container, could be a container in a registry, and you know Azure will spin up that container for you, and you really don't have to think about the infrastructure. It's serverless. So that's one. And I think we're adding more and more dev features to that every day to make it better for like app developers and not just infrastructure and kind of middleware platform creators. So that I think that's going to be neat. What else would I point to? I mean, definitely GitHub and GitHub Actions, which as a DevOps person, Jeffrey, I'm sure you watch that one.
Oh,
that's
yeah.
Clearly absolutely taking off. I could think of more, but I guess that was top of mind. If you're building a distributed application, also Event Grid is one that I would really look at, just you know, so that you can have the different kind of event-driven kind of web worker kind of model, even PubSub. I think that's another one.
Okay. Now, as far as products go, are there any products that your team directly ships and revs on?
Yeah, definitely. So from a product viewpoint, so let's talk about tools. We do the Azure tools for VS Code and for Visual Studio. So if I'm in Visual Studio, you know, when you install Visual Studio and it we call them workloads, but kind of says, what kind of workloads do you work on? You work on web or desktop or cloud? So the cloud one, that's the tools, that's the part of the product we deliver, which, you know, you check the box and you're going to get Azure deployment for web apps. You're going to get container tooling. You're going to get Azure Resource Manager, ARM tooling for your infrastructure. You're going to get a lot of stuff like that. You're going to get remote debugging of cloud applications. VS Code, same analog, just kind of done the VS Code way. Like VS Code is all about extensions. So there's a number of Azure extensions. There's even an Azure extension bundle, and we deliver those. You know, really common ones would be like the App Service, the Functions, the Azure Resource Manager, Bicep, Docker, that extension we own. So there's quite a few on the VS Code side, which is kind of in the style of VS Code. And then, you know, we work on other tools, like let's talk about Storage Explorer, right? Really easy tool to get data in and out of the Azure Storage Service.
Everybody uses that.
Okay, yeah. So you know that one. And that one was a fun one because that's the first truly cross-plat tool that my team ever built.
And it appears like a desktop app too.
It does, yeah. So it's based on Electron and Chromium. And so that's how we pulled that off. And we ended up like learning Node.js to build that. And I think, you know, it was just really fun because it got us thinking a little bit more broadly about who the user is these days. And we, you know, it's just a quick departure. So we, coming with the Visual Studio DNA, you know, we're kind of like, hey, we should build tree views inside of Visual Studio because that's sort of the way. And we did that. We built Server Explorer and then Cloud Explorer, and the usage was always a bit low.
Mm-hmm.
And we got feedback that, hey, this isn't quite in the workflow. Like when I'm putting data in storage, I'm not always in my IDE. You know, just not quite right. And so that inspired Storage Explorer to be its own tool that's kind of like a companion. And then, you know, even recognizing you could be on a Mac, you could be on Linux when you're actually operating a site. So we went that way.
Okay.
Just to finish the question. So we do some services, and most specifically, we do the application change analysis service, which is in Azure. You can just type change into the portal and it'll come up. And that tells you, as a dev or a DevOps person, like what changed in a time frame. It could be my Azure resources, it could be my app, it could be a deployment, it could be health. But we enumerate in nitty-gritty detail all the little changes, and you can correlate that to maybe incidents that happened, like I started having failures or I had slow perf. And it's just kind of the what changed. when you're having an incident, it answers that question. And then we also, we do deeper diagnostics tools. I think, you know, Azure Profiler is a good example. So you can really get deep into hot paths and things affecting your app performance.
Many thanks to our podcast sponsor, Clear Measure. Clear Measure is a software architecture company that empowers clients' development teams to be self-sufficient, moving fast, delivering quality, and running their systems with confidence. Whether starting a new project or developing new technologies or techniques, Clear Measure sets up your team to deliver world-class results. Learn more at www.clearmeasure.com. Clear Measure, empowering software delivery.
Well, one of the things that is a common question with, I guess, any type of application. Now, we know that most people work on business applications, and no one's going to write out in the field. Well, not no one, but the Azure Storage Explorer. That okay, it's a client, but then it just calls other things. You know, a lot of devs have you know, persistent storage as well, big SQL Server databases, and other things. But a common question is, What does a deployment pipeline look like? Everyone's starting to understand what it means to build and actually create artifacts that are ready to be deployed somewhere. But then, even from an architecture perspective and you're thinking in the cloud, how many stages do you guys have before you actually move it to production? How do you reason about test environments and manage those and then spin them up or leave them for a long time? What's the thought process there in your team?
Yeah. It's an awesome and a deep question and filled with debate. But I won't cop out and say, like, it depends. I'll try to give you a straight answer.
We can shift to tabs versus spaces.
No. Yeah. Oh, gosh. I will give you my answer in YAML, no. Jeffrey.
Right.
How we think about it. So I think, like, I'll start generally, and then I'll kind of zoom into to nitty-gritty. So with a pipeline, we kind of think about, you know, from a developer, the second you commit or PR code, it leaves your hands and enters the pipeline, mm-hmm. right? And typically we want to have some builds and some really easy, we call it even the inner loop, like something that just as a dev, you can unit test and try your own code, make sure that functionally it's sort of okay before you put it in the pipeline. So we still, I would call that either the local or the local developer phase. It's even before it's pre-commit. Once you commit, I think what we recommend and see the most is that you go into a dev and test environment. And so we build for dev and test. The traceability and the debuggability, we would ratchet up in that environment. Maybe don't spend $1 zillion on resources. You spend just enough to kind of support the testing, but you're probably not running under heavy load or with the best infrastructure in the world, right?
Functional testing.
Functional testing and, you know, some integration testing really starts there too. And then what we see is a pre-prod phase often. And pre-prod, we focus on a lot of the real world conditions that it's kind of your last chance to try it before you're actually experimenting or testing in prod on your live customers. And in that case, you know, I would expect load tests there. I would start to see even fault tolerance testing, which some of our customers do, you know, trying a bunch of errors and chaos and seeing if your app can kind of deal with that.
Well, we'll pause for a second on the load testing because Visual Studio used to have a load testing product and now it doesn't. So what do you guys tend to use to generate the load for those tests?
Yeah, I think, you know, we use a lot of open source, like I think a lot of people. JMeter pops to the top. We use JMeter. K6, I'm fascinated by the features that K6 has. So we look at that too. They do a really nice job with lifecycle events. So I think that's, you know, we spend time there. And I would say, like, you can't see me winking, but stay tuned.
Gotcha.
Maybe ask me again in a little while.
All right. Sounds good.
But you didn't hear it here. Yeah. So there's that phase. It's more about production realism. It's kind of that last chance before prod. And then, you know, production, I see at that point, it's pretty ceremoniously kind of really handed off to admins, you know, definitely not the devs that we see most of the time working in prod. There's, you know, quality gates and all kinds of gates that govern going into prod. And, you know, there's a number of strategies like blue-green or canary that might make sense. I think what we use a lot internally is a bit more like a canary, where we have a safe deployment strategy for our own services, where we, you know, if you thought about where you can deploy to as rings, let's say I'm just going to return, you know, one data center first, and it's a data center that people know they're getting bits first, so the risk is acceptable. Like, I wouldn't put our tax software there.
Yeah.
I would put something a little bit like more risk tolerant there. So we, you know, deploy there and we look at our metrics and we monitor, and if that's okay, we open the rings more and more and more. And so that's like a canary pattern. So we do that a lot. And I think the other thing you keep in mind is your branches. Like, your branches have a lot to do, I think, with your deployment pipeline. And it's like, which branch are you shipping out of? I think as a strategy, we try to ship out of main or as close to main as possible. And there's a lot of debate over this too, but what we've sort of find is the more branches and forks you have, the more sort of debt and uncertainty you have. And so you're better off just trying to ship as close to main or out of main as you can. And I think that's the best practice we look at pretty often. And we came from a world where it'd be kind of the opposite. You would make a fork for what you would ship, and then you would hotfix the heck out of that fork. But then again, like the drift and the debt would build between that and main, and you're kind of working in two places, and just human mistakes happen. And so we try not to do that anymore. And especially now, we're like, you want to automate things, you want it to be repeatable, and it becomes more repeatable the more the truth is in your code.
Right, right.
We believe. So I don't know if that answered your question, but that's kind of my perspective on it. Yeah.
And you mentioned you have kind of multi-tenancy baked into everything with the concept of rings, where you don't have a single production environment. You have many production environments, and you can deploy to one or some of them. I can see that they're asking, wait a minute, there's data centers that get bits faster. I want to be in one of those. Is there a way, which Azure regions get the bits faster, or how does that work?
That's a really good question. Well, first of all, we let customers know if they're in that region. And it's kind of like we negotiate that a little bit. It's not always a good thing to be first. I'll say that. I'm probably, you know, I'm not the best expert, but I know that there's kind of negotiations and very clear communication. And if you are a customer who's been affected negatively by a rollout, you actually can ask to be in one of these canary regions so that your software is kind of part of the test bed. But you know, you live by the sword in that case. You get the good and the bad, right? You kind of might be responding to more stuff, but you get an early radar.
Okay. So it's not a public selection. It's more of call Microsoft and you can arrange it. Okay.
Yeah, because we have these sort of like even dog food kind of rings that happen before, let's say, West US 2, which is a very prominent region that you can see rolled out from.
Gotcha. Okay. Well, as we kind of end our time here, if people want to see more from the Azure Dev Experience team, what you guys are working on, where would you point them to?
Yeah, so on azure.com or azure.com/tools is kind of a shortcut to get in. You can see a lot of the tooling that we're shipping. Also, you know, docs.microsoft.com Azure is really where we have more of the, I think, practical guidance on, like, here's how you do things. I can give you an ACCA, or I can give you a short link that maybe if you could do me a favor and include.
Yeah,
whatever. Point to some of these things. But it ends up being our developer center for Azure developers.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
Awesome.
Yep.
All right. And where can people find you? Do you Twitter or LinkedIn or blog?
I am on the Twitter.
There's so many new social networks out here. It's like, what are the names?
Yeah, I like, I think Twitter is really good because I can respond quickly and I watch it. So at Paul Yuki, so not Paul Yuck this time, Paul Yuki, PaulYuki99. That's my handle on Twitter.
Okay.
And you can always email me, PaulYuk@microsoft.com. I think other than those social networks, I'm probably more antisocial. So I don't do all of them, but yeah, those are the ones I do.
Born and bred introvert.
Yes, exactly.
I think that's probably the majority of people who love talking to a computer through code all day.
Fair enough. I feel like the computer understands me. So that's great. But honestly, I'd love to hear from you. I'd love to hear what's good, bad, and ugly with what you're trying. So that's what makes it run. We want to do the right stuff for you all.
Awesome. All right. Well, Paul, I appreciate you coming on the show. This is fantastic. Thank you so much.
This is really good. Yeah, I hope you have me back. Thanks.
All right. And until next time, keep shipping.
You've been listening to the Azure DevOps Podcast, a show for developers and DevOps professionals shipping software using Microsoft technologies. Go to www.azuredevops.show for show notes and other episodes. On behalf of your host, Jeffrey Palermo, and our sponsors, thanks for listening, and may God bless you.